Hello, and welcome to Sporecast, a Canadian podcast discussing patient-oriented research, research done in partnership with patients. I'm Beverly Pomeroy.
And I'm Lisa Ridgway, and we are patient partners who sit on a variety of patient councils and advisory groups, all with the vision to encourage research to answer research questions that matter to patients and aim to improve healthcare.
Thank you for joining us today. We hope you will be inspired to get involved and create your own impact in order to support healthcare research be more relevant and meaningful. Please enjoy the show.
Well, Lisa, I'm really excited. You and I are patient partners, and we really believe in patient engagement. But I think who we have today was really at the inception of all this.
The birth.
Sort of the birth of patient-oriented research. And I really want to welcome Kent Lofsgaard to the show today. I mean, I can't even start with all your titles and what you do, Kent. So thank you so much for being here today.
It's an amazing, amazing fact that we are all three of us in the same studio, and now we've got you.
Yeah. No, I'm super happy about it. So, Ken, I know for those of us that are kind of in the world of patient-oriented research or in patient partners and patient engagement, like, I see you everywhere. I see your pictures everywhere. Like, you are kind of around a lot. So maybe just give us a little bit of background on how you kind of got involved with being a patient partner or in patient engagement.
Well, the specific thing that's now called patient engagement, I was recruited from my work at UBC, where I've been involved in different aspects of interdisciplinary health education programming since the fall of 2011.
Oh, my goodness.
And someone from there had suggested that I should sign up to this new world of patient engagement activities that that was happening through the development of the early development of the support unit, what became the support unit. In fact, before the support unit was officially the support unit, the very first engagement of a patient engagement kind that I was invited into was in the summer of 2016.
Okay.
And at that time, ironically enough, the gathering was specifically to discuss fair compensation standards for engaged patients.
Excuse me. A conversation that continues to this very day.
Right. Ongoing.
Which was strange to me because I have been working in the things that I do in healthcare and communications for a long, long time, long before the term patient engagement was ever being used.
Okay.
And I have never felt like my services are inherently less valuable because they're being rendered by someone with a congenital visible condition. So I obviously had a lot to say about what I think are fair compensation standards.
Yes.
But that was the first conversation of that kind that I had been invited to. And from there, one thing led to another.
As it often does.
I was invited to become part of the initial working group that became what is now the Patient Council.
Okay.
The
BC Support Unit. I was essentially the presented founding patient.
Wow. You were like patient number one.
Patient zero.
Patient zero, pardon me.
The BC Support
zero.
Unit.
Yay.
In the sense that I was the patient invited to present to the media opening of the support unit that was held at the School of Population and Public Health in November of 2016.
Wow.
At that time, we had both the federal and provincial health ministers present.
Okay.
And I was very disappointed by my journalistic colleagues because rather than take advantage of their encouraged opportunity to inquire about the plan for the support unit, they instead took advantage of the captive audience of the health ministers to grill them on the opioid crisis.
Oh, hijacking the event. Yes, for a worthwhile cause, but still, that wasn't the idea. So you are still currently on the Provincial Patient Council for the BC Support Unit, and you have, amongst your many titles, policy advisor, clinical educator, ethicist. Do you favor one of those titles? And those are only three of your many, but which one is the most you?
Most of those are outside the support unit,
in
other professional circles where I render services of different kinds.
Okay.
But what I would say is the common thread across just about everything that I do is that it's all education of a kind.
Okay.
Because whether it's in journalism trying to untangle the happenings in healthcare so that the public, I hope, is able to make better informed decisions about their health and what's happening in the health system.
Yes.
Whether it's trying to untangle the jargon of health publishing so that at the same time as it should reach the scope of the specialist, it still stays within the comprehension of the layperson.
Yes.
Whether it's teaching the clinical care employees that we have that come into Vancouver Coastal Health and helping them to get oriented to the idea of patient-centered care and interdisciplinary care, whether it's navigating the whole thing of interdisciplinary research teams now where we have not just patient partners and not just research partners, but also clinician partners and policymaker partners, many of which are not particularly good at knowing what each other does.
All education of a kind.
And it's all education of a kind.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, Kent, because you've been part of the patient-oriented research world, like you just mentioned, like from the outset, right, at the beginning. And so that was 2016. We're now 2019, sort of rounding out the year. What have you seen change or evolve or shift within those last couple of years? Like, what stands out for you that we've made progress, or have we made progress?
I think we really have made progress in the sense that from CIHR down at least into the provincial and federal health ministries, if you ask any of those staff members, they will tell you that patient-oriented research is increasingly becoming just best practices research.
Yes.
If you go beyond that circle, you will very likely find that there is additional evangelization and discipleship yet to be achieved.
Oh, yet to be achieved. So within our own lane or our own swimming pool, it's there. But once you step outside of the Canadian Institute of Health Research into other areas of healthcare, what you're saying is it's not there yet. We haven't got there yet.
It's not there yet.
Okay.
And it has been surprising to me the degree to which there still are people who don't consistently believe that research on people should be research for or with people.
Shame on
them. Why do you think there's that pushback? Like, I'm curious, right? Like, why is there still that pushback?
I think it may be because there are researchers that have gotten all too comfortable inside their scientific silos.
Okay.
And they don't necessarily relish the idea of being accountable to what I call a benevolent system of checks and balances, because they don't really want to have to identify a patient benefit to their outcomes.
Okay, they've gotten comfortable, the complacency of energy. So you put yourself out as a patient partner at many different levels, obviously the BC Support Unit, but also many national levels, and you've got a fairly new role as the co-chair of the strategic advisory panel for CIHR. What does that entail? Do you consider yourself, as a result of that, do you consider yourself a health leader?
I think that I have been a health leader of a kind for for quite a few years now through no real aspiration of my own.
Okay.
I think one of the ways that I have been able to offer a kind of health leadership is just by being present and being one of the only people of my kind who does exactly what I do.
Okay.
Because there, even though there are now, thankfully, many more increased opportunities for journalists in general,
yes,
who are people with visible congenital conditions,
yes,
there still are not a whole bunch of healthcare professionals or specialists in communication or education in healthcare specifically that are also people with visible congenital conditions.
Yes.
But what I always say to my colleagues that I have mentored up through the broadcast journalism industry is that part of how we can make it more normal mm-hmm. for people with visible congenital conditions to be properly widely regarded as meaningful professionals, how we make that more normal is just to keep showing up.
Yes. That could be almost 90% of the game, just keep on showing up.
Yeah, and I think you're really playing that leadership role, because I do see you showing up, and I think it's remarkable that you put the kind of energy and into that. And, you know, so we talk about leadership, you know, as patient partners, and you just talked about it as well, and we kind of have discovered this term, moral courage. And I'm curious from your sort of perspective, like, you know, because we believe that patients, like you mentioned, should be involved for and with research. So when we're talking about moral courage in the healthcare research world, are we looking at a long game? Like we talked about, we're now 3.5 years in. Is it a long game? And then you are showing up, you know, like we
yes.
talked to Christina Krause from BC Patient Safety Quality Council, and she talked about showing up as well. Like, how do you maintain that sort of energy?
I think that it is just a matter of showing up, and I think that it is also a long game, and it's a long game that those of us who have been showing up have been playing for a while.
I was going to say, you've been playing for a long time.
You actually defined the rules. I think yeah, you actually yeah. defined the rules
I think
of play.
You wrote the book of that. Yeah,
yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yes, I think that on one hand, I think we do have a responsibility to make sure that a diversity of voices are invited to
yes.
the table. And I think that we have a responsibility to make it as possible as we can to facilitate the participation of those voices at the table.
Yes.
But beyond that, then the responsibility falls on those individuals from whatever sector they may come to act on that invitation and tell us what they need
yes.
to make their participation meaningful and to make it possible for them to show up and contribute as best they can.
And how do you think we can do that?
I think that we can do that partially by continuing to ask ourselves who's not
yes.
at the table.
Who, right.
Who are we missing?
Right.
And the Aboriginal community has become a big part of that
yes.
Conversation. Mm-hmm. But an issue that occurs to me that I think is a little bit concerning and might be a bit of a cautionary tale
okay.
for the rest of us who are addressing aspects of diversity is that at the same time as we don't want Aboriginal representation and our ongoing desire for it to risk casting other perspectives more into the shadow,
yes.
Across the spectrum of diverse voices, at the same time, we don't want to make the mistake of thinking that any Aboriginal perspective is every Aboriginal
yes.
perspective.
Mm. Yes, the cautionary tale that every patient is told you do not represent all patients, you represent yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And so knowing that, and I think that's kind of part of our point, I talk about diversity obviously being part of the LGBTQ community, but I also talk about diversity of disease, and I think that's something that you're passionate about as well, is
right.
is how do we get all those voices? We know statistically it's like 55 plus female, Caucasian, you know, living in suburbia.
Yes.
That's kind of part of the patient-oriented research world. And you know, we're talking about Indigenous communities and other community groups. So I'm just curious too. Like, if you could shine a spotlight on one aspect of you being a patient partner and maybe teaching somebody else who's listening to this who maybe is part of that group or not part of that group, but wants to get involved. Like, what aspect of what you do in this world of patient-oriented research would you show and shine?
Really, I'm most excited by the work that's happening in ChildBright, which is another branch of SPOR that I'm affiliated with as a member of their training team.
Wow.
Because ChildBright has offered something really meaningful and hasn't had any problems integrating, you know, someone like me who was a health professional of a kind before coming into the patient engagement world as well.
Okay.
Whereas there's a lot of other sectors that still are not totally sure what to do with people who are part patients but were health professionals of various kinds first.
Okay.
You know, there are a few of us floating around in you know, on the lower mainland, and I'm certainly doing everything I can to try
and invite
and to create more of those kinds of professionals to come to the table. But one of the things that we're doing in ChildBright is we're developing some programming that we hope will help youth with various kinds of congenital neurological conditions who might have an interest in pursuing patient-oriented research professionally or some other aspect of the health system to be mentored into the health system.
Yes, that is really exciting. I can see why that creates the passion in you, because addressing the putting the spotlight on youth, on children, on the families that are dealing with children that perhaps have, you know, congenital issues, that's where the spotlight will really stay, I hope, because that speaks volumes for where we should be going.
Yeah. I like to say that I've spent a lot of my professional life essentially showing up in places that I wasn't really expected to be able to be and able to do things that I wasn't really expected to be able to do. But I want to change that situation for the next generation.
Okay, so you have 100%, perhaps 150% of your energy going into patient-oriented research, and you have intentions and you have knowledge and lived experience. But our provocative question, because we always ask one on Sporecast or two, is, are we changing the world? And can we, as patients, live with a slow speed of change?
I think we are changing the world within the circumstances that we can control.
Okay.
But I think that it's too early at this point to tell what the longitudinal effect of change will be.
Okay. Hmm.
Nevertheless, I like also to say that we shouldn't be so intimidated by everything we can't do that we forget to do everything we can do.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that's a really important statement.
I
just think it's really important, because I think it goes back to what your sort of spotlight show and shine too is around the mentorship and capacity building. And I do think it's missing in regards to patient partners and patient-oriented research in particular, around capacity building. What do you see as key sort of ideas around that, Kent, the mentorship and capacity building? Like, what do we need to provide for patient partners? Or, I mean, I know health literacy, as we talked about that a little bit and in our conversations before. I mean, I've been in healthcare prior to my role as a patient partner in research, so I have a health literacy, and sometimes when I'm invited to the table, I don't want to use this word, but sometimes I'm accused of people that want me at the table. It's like attracts light. Like, I have health literacy, so they want me there because I'm an easier lift
than
bringing somebody in who doesn't have that. So what do we need to do to help build the capacity of others to get engaged?
I definitely think that health literacy is part of it, but I also think that we need to be prepared to meet people where they are according to their own identified needs. Because there are many, many situations where I welcome the opportunity to mentor folks that are interested in whatever aspect of anything that I do. But that doesn't mean that I think that in order to be an effective patient entering into any aspect of advocacy or systems change in the health system, that you have to be able to do everything that I can do.
True. Yeah. Okay, so we have lots of listeners, and perhaps one of them is out there and he's thinking, I'm a patient partner, I want to get involved in health research, I want to share my lived experience. What do you say to him?
I say call the BC Support Unit.
BCSupportUnit.ca.
Yes, okay. And conversely, on the other side of that coin, what happens if you are out there as a listener and perhaps you're thinking, I'm a health researcher, I'm an academic, and I want to get patients involved in my research or in my teaching. What do you say to them?
I say call the BC Support Unit.
I say call Kent.
Call Kent, actually. Yes, I say the individual to call is you, because my background is advocacy, and I'm professionally trained as an advocate. Kent, I wouldn't wish law school on anybody. You might not have gone through it, but you're as an effective advocate for people with congenital conditions and for health literacy and for becoming a fully engaged patient partner, as I would even hope to be. You're off of the spectrum. So what else can we ask you that will help you create this vision of mentorship and showing and shining?
Well, that's very interesting. Because I also come from a background of interviewing of various kinds.
The producer in Kent is coming.
Exactly.
Yes.
I'm putting my producer hat on in this
Good.
Case to ask you guys, what do you hope? Because this now, Sporecast, is a very, very new venture.
It is.
If I remember the number from your impressively composed production call sheet, I think this is episode 8.
Yes.
For those that are really paying attention.
Yes.
So what do you hope for the future reach and impact and scope of Sporecast?
Well, I can tell you, having you turn up on the show again. Sorry, this is too much of a love-in. Bev, what do we hope to accomplish, aside from tuning people in and making them aware that the patient-oriented world is multifaceted and everybody has to be approached from where they are to join this very, very big table?
Well, I think that's the point, I think, of having Sporecast. I think Lisa and I both thought it was a platform and a modality that we can meet people where they're at, right? So anybody can listen to a podcast regardless
yes.
of where they're at in their disease process
yes.
And where they're at physically. So I think it was our way of meeting people where they're at
yes.
in a way that was comfortable for Lisa and I to have engaging conversations. And I mean, it's totally selfish on my part that I get to speak to people like you and, you know, interview people, and we get to have these experiences, because this is what we do normally. I mean, you know, Kent and I, you know, we spend like an hour and a half on the phone having a conversation half the time. So
time flies.
Yeah, so to be able to have it and to share that with other people who maybe normally would not have the chance to speak to Kent.
Absolutely.
Or myself. So Kent, that's kind of, I mean, a long-winded answer, but it really is trying to meet people where they're at.
I have no words, which is funny for a lawyer to say, but I think you've answered it pretty well.
Let's document this. That's awesome, Kent. Well, I wanted to thank you so much for coming in. We're actually here at the BC Support Unit today taping. We have a great view. We'll make sure we tweet that out
yes.
So people can see that. But I want to thank you so much,
yes.
Kent, for being here and for being such an involved person
Absolutely.
In the world that you are. You've been doing it for a long time. So talk about mentorship and reverence. I think most of us have that for you. So thank you so much, Kent, for being on the show today.
Yeah, that was just
it's
great,
It's my
Kent.
Pleasure and privilege. Thank
okay.
you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining Sporecast today. We hope you will be inspired to get involved and create your own impact through patient engagement in patient-oriented research and help healthcare research be more relevant and meaningful.
If you'd like to get in touch with us and learn more, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @Spore_cast. That's Spore, S-P-O-R, _cast, C-A-S-T, #Sporecast. We can also be reached via email at sporecast1@gmail.com or visit our website, www.sporecast.ca.